All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW-2 helicopter type pilot in Vietnam in 1969. I want to welcome you to our program this week before Christmas. We're really excited. We've got a kind of a cool deal going on today. We're going to be talking with an organization called Trees for Troops. They provide Christmas trees for military bases, for military personnel, of course, and they gather trees from all over the country. So I'm excited to talk with Rick Dungy, who is the executive director of that organization. And then we're going to go into some books for those of you that are procrastinators when it comes to buying Christmas gifts. We've got Mark Leibson from the Vietnam Veterans of America. He's a book reviewer for their magazine, The Veteran. So he's going to be on talking about some suggestions. We're going to get started right away. But before I do that, I've got to thank our sponsors. As many of you know, Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio America, which is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And so if you would like to support Veterans Radio, we just sent out a mailer for this, of course. But if you would like to support Veterans Radio, you can just go to veteransradio.net, click on the donate button, and we appreciate every nickel we can get. I'll tell you that right now. But also, we've got a couple of other bigger groups that sponsor us. Number one is Legal Help for Veterans. And Legal Help for Veterans, they specialize in veterans disability claims. So give Legal Help a call at 800-693-4800. That's 800-693-4800. Or you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. And you can actually start your claim right there if you want to. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran own businesses. For more information, you can go to their website, that's nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. If you are a veteran-owned business and you want to do business with the federal government and many corporations, you need to be certified, which means that you are really a veteran-owned business. There's been a little bit of hanky-panky with that in the past. So this is what NVBD does, is they certify you as a veteran-owned business. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information about them, you can go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. We also want to thank our local veterans organizations. They were the ones at the beginning back in 2003 that got us started. And they include the Irwin Prescorn American Legion Post 46, the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, and VFW Post 423, all out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. So we want to thank all of those organizations for supporting Veterans Radio. And again, if you'd like to support us, all you got to do is go to veteransradio.net and click on the donate button. All right, I want to get right into our program, because I was really excited when I saw this article. I believe it was in the Ann Arbor News. It talked about Trees for Troops. And so after a quick little research and a little click on the contact button, I met my first guest, and I want to introduce him to you. This is Rick Dungy, and he is the executive director of Trees for Troops. So, Rick, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good afternoon, Dale. How are you, sir?
I am fine. Thank you very much. Nobody's called me sir in many years.
Oh, sorry. It's a habit.
I know. We all have it.
I'm 53 years old, and I still can't break the habit. My parents, my mother made me say sir and ma'am all the time. I just can't break that habit.
That's all right. You were raised by good people. It sounds like just like me. I still call people sir. But anyway, Rick, I was really excited to have you on because this Trees for Troops really kind of sparked my interest. So can you tell me a little bit about the organization and what is it that you do?
Yeah, so the organization is the Christmas Spirit Foundation, and it's a C3. It was formed back in 2005 by the Grower National Christmas Tree Association. And just sort of an interesting confluence that same year also is when we were approached by FedEx. And they said, we like your mission. Is there any way we can work together? So we had this crazy idea. We knew that there were tree farms all across the country who were near military bases. And they had been taking trees growing on their farm and taking them to the local base and saying, here, I grew these trees. I'd like you to have them, just as a thank you. So the idea wasn't new. The concept wasn't new, but now we had this interest from a national partner. And we said, well, what if we had a bunch of tree farms that weren't near a base? Would you be willing to go and pick up some trees? If we could coordinate donating and gathering all those together, would you be willing to go and pick them up and take them to bases that weren't near a tree farm? and they said, yeah, sure, we could do that. And that's how the whole program got started the same year that the foundation started. I think that first year in 2005, we did 4,500 trees, only to five bases. But it got such a good response, and got people interested. And then all of a sudden we had more farms call us and say, well, I'd like to donate some trees. Where can I take them? And we had more bases call us and say, we'd like some trees too. Can you bring us some? And it just got bigger and bigger. And we just finished our 18th consecutive year. And we just passed in those 18 years, a total of just over 292,000 fresh farm grown Christmas trees have been donated to the military in the 18 years the program's been going.
Wow. I think that's just so cool that's occurred. I was just thinking when I saw the FedEx here and you mentioned it, you know, Fred Smith is a Marine veteran from Vietnam and was a helicopter pilot. You know, so I kind of always associate myself with him, even though I don't have any idea who he is. But, but it's, I think the idea of, just distributing these things. And you said this was a result of the, National Association of Christmas Tree Association, right?
That's who first formed the foundation. In fact, we're still very much, sort of tied to them. In fact, three of the positions on our board of trustees are reserved for people appointed by the NCTA, board of directors. So, I think that it's obvious to our board of trustees that our biggest program, Trees for Troops, can't happen without the coordination and involvement by the industry, the farmers that grow the trees. And so, it very much still is a sort of a partnership situation. We can't do it without the farmers. I tell the farmers all the time, you are where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, that's for sure.
No matter how many miles FedEx Freight's willing to drive, if we can't get the trees, there's no program, you know, so.
Yeah, well, I was interested because I found out that here locally, the Michigan Christmas Tree Association evidently is involved with this as well. And of course, in our local area, I can think three or four Christmas tree farms, that would appreciate people. And I think the idea of people knowing that fresh trees are being delivered to military troops across the country might inspire a few more people to trek out into the woods and get a tree.
Yeah, I think we get about 1,200 trees out of Michigan total. I think about 17, 18 total farms, provide all those trees and gather them. We pick them up from three different locations in Michigan, one way up north, one on the west side, one on the east side. And working with the Michigan, Association, it's so much better for us when we get that cooperation from the State Growers Association. We know who's going to bring trees. We know how many they're going to bring. And we get a lot of that out of the growers in Michigan. In fact, I was at their summer conference this past summer talking to the growers. That's part of what I do is each summer I try to go to some of the state growers, meetings. And set up a little information booth to just talk to the farmers and say, here's what the program is. If you're not involved, here's how you get involved. And just really make it more of a partnership kind of a thing between the farmers groups, and what we do.
I think you guys have got the spirit here and the kind of sort of Christmas spirit foundation is the kind of the umbrella of this whole thing. Do you do anything else other than the Trees for Troops, or is that your main cause right there?
Yeah, we do other programs. We've done other programs in the past. We're currently also getting ready to start our second year of doing a Christmas card design contest, where we ask people to design a Christmas card that represents to them what it means to have Christmas spirit. And we have prizes for youth and adult categories. And last year was the first year that we did it. And then we had a panel of judges, score them, And then we put the finalists out and let our followers on Facebook vote for their favorite. And then we're going to be able to put those onto an actual Christmas card itself. And the board is also getting ready to start it's called Spirit Without Limit, fund, and it's finding examples of programs that can promote Christmas spirit even all year round. And helping to get those programs either off the ground or make them bigger and better. So you don't want to just promote Christmas spirit one day out of the year, right? Like Charles Dickens said, you know, you want to keep it in your heart all year round. So
that's true. So if anybody who's listening wanted to get up, obviously not for this year, but maybe for next year for your, Christmas card decoration group, how would they go about doing that?
On the website will be the instructions and a link, to upload your artwork. Treesfortroops.org or ChristmasSpiritFoundation.org. The Christmas card contest should be live here, soon. I gotta make sure all the back end stuff is ready. Right. But yeah, that's how we did it last year. So it was just a link and people uploaded, their artwork, and then we submitted the artwork to a panel of judges. And they scored them in early January is how we determined the winners last year.
Okay. And what was I going to ask? Oh, your Facebook page. And so is that just Trees for Troops or is it the Christmas Spirit?
Trees for Troops, is how you find us on Facebook, or any of the social media channels. We try to maintain a pretty active, you know, we get a lot of people that follow, people do fundraisers for us, on Facebook. One of the things I like to point out is the foundation is entirely funded by individual donations, and some sponsor dollars. So people do fundraisers. They do really creative things, whether it's just a simple birthday fundraiser. We have businesses that have Trees for Troops fundraiser. There was a farm this year that did a whole weekend, where they had vendors out, a barbecue joint and this mobile axe throwing company and craft breweries came out and wineries and all these different activities. All these vendors came and participated in their farm opening weekend. But in order to do so, they had to agree to give part of their funds to Trees for Troops.
Right.
So, I was like, you know, she called me up, said, well, we're doing this big fundraiser and we're going to have all these vendors sending you a check. And I was like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's always a nice surprise when somebody sends you a check.
Yeah.
You never know where it's going to come from. Well, I think this has been great. Now, this is been fun talking with Rick Dungy. He's the executive director of Trees for Troops, which is part of the Christmas Spirit Foundation, .org, which is Christmas Spirit year round, as he just pointed out. And so for more information, you can go to their website. That's treesfortroops.org or christmasspiritfoundation.org. And Rick, I wish you the best of luck with everything with this organization and with what you're doing. I want to thank you. I just think it's so cool. And, yeah, I'm anxious to connect.
We did our last base delivery this year on December 9th. Fort Carson was our 84th and final base that we delivered trees to.
Wow.
So 84 bases this year, and I got the total just this week, 16,391 fresh Christmas trees were donated to 84 bases across the U.S. this year.
That's great. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and a very, very Merry Christmas to you and your whole organization.
Thank you, Dale. I sure appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you.
All right. Thank you. All right. We're going to go right now. We're going to go into our first interview, and this is with Mark Leibson. And Mark is the, as I mentioned before, is a book reviewer for the Vietnam Veteran Magazine. And it's so this was recorded yesterday because Mark is off doing something else. He's also a well-known author, so check him out. He's a good guy. So we're going to go right into his interview right now. And when he comes back after, we'll be coming back after the Medal of Honor sequence. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. Stay tuned. All right. Here we are on Veterans Radio. And as promised at the beginning of the program, my guest is Mark Leibson. And Mark is a well-known writer. He's a Vietnam veteran himself. I've known about Mark for a number of years. He was on our program, I think it was maybe last year, talking about his book, The Ballad of the Green Beret. He's also been writing book reviews for the Vietnam Veterans magazine called The Veteran for many, many years. Another one of his books that I just discovered was The Dictionary of the Vietnam War. So anyhow, I'm inviting Mark to come on the program today to talk about some books that maybe you might be interested in. So Mark Leibson, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Great to see you again on radio.
It is great. The technology of Zoom is wonderful.
Yeah.
So I was reading recently in my latest veteran magazine about two historical books that you had reviewed. Could you talk about those just briefly?
Oh, yeah. I have my list here, so I was the latest one that I think is might be of interest to most people is the Kennedy Withdrawal, which is about this giant question that's been asked and never been really answered, of course, because it's unanswerable. But, you know, what would John F. Kennedy have done had he not been assassinated and had he been faced with what was happening in the Vietnam War? He was assassinated in November of 63. And we know that the war escalated in the summer of 1964 with the Tonkin Gulf Resolution and so on. And, you know, Kennedy had spoken about, well, he had started, look, when Kennedy became president in January of 61, there were something like 1,500 American advisors in Vietnam. When he died, there were 15,000. So he, those are round numbers, but that's correct. So he was, he had escalated the war. Of course, they were quote unquote advisors. There weren't, you know, big combat divisions in there, but near the end of his life, he did, withdraw some troops and there was talk of withdrawing more. So that's the question that's been debated all these years. And this guy, Mark Silverstone, who, is a scholar at the Miller Center at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. They do really great work on presidential politics there. And especially 20th century. So, he's just done the deep, people have written about this before, but he's done the deepest of deep dives into coming as close as anybody can, right? Because it's a what if it never happened. Right. His conclusion is, nothing definitive, but he does marshal a lot of evidence that, number one, Kennedy was an extreme cold warrior, like almost every other politician, Democratic and Republican, was in that time period. You know, when we're talking about the early 60s, it's almost that 1950s, mentality. And so because of that and a few other things he said and what his brother, Robert F. Kennedy, and some of JFK's other advisors said, he leans toward the idea that Kennedy most likely would have done kind of what LBJ did and escalate the war. So, not definitive, but there's so much good information and so much good history. I recommend that highly.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that book is called The Kennedy Withdrawal, and the author is
right.
Mark Silverstone. Silverstone.
Right. And, right.
Yeah. And the other one that I thought was interesting from this month, I don't mean to get into it much, was you were talking about Henry Kissinger, Leadership, Six Studies in World Strategies. And we all know how much everybody loves Henry Kissinger.
You know, when you said that, I thought, oh, no, don't make me talk about Kissinger.
Let's just say.
All right.
It's an interesting read, obviously, but, I'll just do my own little review here. I haven't read the book entirely, but that, he's still defending Nixon's actions, 60 years later, about what he did. But it's a good read. And I think sometimes when you read these books, you kind of pick up information that you never would have thought about and the reasoning behind their decisions. So anyway, we won't discuss that book any longer.
Yeah. You don't want my blood pressure to go up.
No, yeah. It's not good. Both of us have blood pressure problems, so we don't want to do that. So you mentioned earlier that you have your own list, so I'll let you go through that.
Yeah, I will. I went over, the magazine, the books that I reviewed and the ones I liked the best over the last year, and a couple of them were actually from 2021, but it bled into 2022. And so I wanted to highly recommend, I think you probably know Homer Hickam. He was a Vietnam vet. He is a Vietnam vet. And he wrote, Rocket Boys, that great memoir about growing up in West Virginia and being fascinated by rockets. And it became that movie, October Sky, which is a great Hollywood movie. But he has and he's written like 15 or 16 books since then. His new memoir is called Don't Blow Yourself Up, which I love.
That's a great book. I have read that one.
Have you read it?
Yeah.
Do you agree? I mean, it's about him growing up, and it has a lot about his Vietnam War tour of duty, which was really strange. I mean, you and I both have read lots of, stories about crazy things that happened to guys and women who served in the Vietnam War. Good, bad, and indifferent, crazy, funny, weird. Well, Homer sort of got a lot of that. He went over there in an MOS that they put him in a job he wasn't trained for, and he was a lieutenant. He was leading troops and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm recommending that. Don't blow yourself up. Also, Doug Peacock had a new book out in 2022. And I think the name Doug Peacock may ring a bell for your listeners. He was a Green Beret in the Vietnam War. But he made his name after he came back, and he basically fought a horrible case of PTSD by going out to the wilderness and studying grizzly bears, right? So Doug made his reputation with, what was that book? Grizzly Years, it's called. But his new book, and he has a Vietnam War memoir called Walking It Off, a veteran's look at war and wilderness. But his new book is called Was It Worth It? And Was It Worth It is kind of an encapsulation of all of it, including his Vietnam War tour of duty, including his work with grizzly bears, including his dealing with PTSD. And I've met Doug, and he's a great guy and a great writer. And the book is beautifully produced. Patagonia, that company, mm-hmm. The clothing company, they produce, publish books, not a lot. And they're beautiful. They're really high quality. Lots of great photographs. So the name Doug Peacock. And then I wanted to also talk about Diane Carlson Evans's memoir. Now that came out in 2020, but it kind of got lost in the pandemic. And, it is so good. I was fascinated by it from the beginning to the end. And I think the name Diane Carlson Evans probably rings a bell. She was a nurse in the Vietnam War. She also had bad PTSD when she came home, and she writes about that in the book. But the focus of the book is how she got the Women's Vietnam Veterans Memorial built. It was really her will and determination. Of course, she had a lot of help, and she credits everybody who helped her. And she also names people who worked against her, and her force of will, her strength, got that memorial built and dedicated in 1992. So it's called Healing Wounds by Diane Carlson Evans. I strongly recommend that. And then back to the political realm, but it's more of a personal story than a political story. Craig McNamara was Robert S. McNamara's only son. He had two older sisters. And this is his memoir of growing up. And he's in our generation, maybe a little bit younger than you and me, but he was definitely, I think he was born in 1950. So, he was 18 when his father was running the Vietnam War, right?
Yeah.
And he turned against the war, and he actively was in the anti-war movement. He dropped out of college. He went to South America, and, so it's a kind of a reconciling that Craig, and right now, Craig is, he's a thriving, walnut farm in California, and he's very big in California agriculture. He's on the state agriculture board, and he's very active, and he's making a living. He has a family, and he finally wrote this book. It's called Because Our Fathers Lied, which is a quote from Kipling. And you can imagine, I mean, he had this. Anyway, I if you're interested in this perspective, I mean, you know, we're talking about Kissinger earlier. McNamara's right up there in the villains for those of us who've been involved in the Vietnam War and written about it and took part in it. But this gives you a new perspective. And he's hard on his father. It wasn't easy being his son.
I can only imagine. Gosh.
Political reasons. Yeah. Yeah. The last book that I'll talk about is a really terrific book by a great photographer. Her name is Jessica Hines, H-I-N-E-S. The book is called My Brother's War. And when Jessica was a young girl, I think she was 8 or 9 years old, her brother went off to Vietnam. He was in combat in Vietnam. He came home. He was never the same after. He actually went back to Vietnam to try to marry his Vietnamese girlfriend. That didn't work. He came home and had horrible readjustment problems, and he died. And it was very, very difficult for her as a sister to deal with it. And she's dealt with it now, all these years later, by coming up with this book called My Brother's War, which is, it's hard to describe, but it looks like a coffee table book, but it's deadly serious. It's photographs and photo montages and her thoughts about her brother, about growing up, about his tour of duty in Vietnam, about how he got, believe it or not, I know you won't believe this, screwed over by the VA. Shockeroo.
Right.
And, early death and her coming to terms with it. And, we put one of the photo montages on the cover of the
cover of the veteran, right?
Yeah, the October, November issue. What, the September, October, sorry. Can you edit that? not the November, December issue, but the issue before. So if you can see that, it's on, these are all online, by the way, vvaveteran.org. There's online versions of the print edition. I know you read the print edition because you're a member. Just beautiful photography, really clever. I mean, things she uses are like her brother's like little war guy toys from when he was a kid. Then you'll see a montage that includes like his DD-214 or something from the VA. And a lot of images. She went to Vietnam twice. She visited the wall. And so I really recommend people check out My Brother's War by Jessica Hines. So I think, one quick one. I'm reading it right now. It's a biography of, one of the great characters, I think, in American, at least 20th century, war history. It's called Sharpen Your Bayonets. And it's a biography of General John O'Daniel, who has the greatest, war nickname ever, Iron Mike O'Daniel, right? He was a hero of World War II, but he was also involved in the earliest days of America's participation in the Vietnam War. Before there was a MACV, there was the Military Assistance Command or whatever it was, the predecessor to MACV. When we only had a few hundred people, talking about in the early 50s, right after World War II. So starting in, I think, 50 or 51, but that's when he was in charge, and he was the wrong man at the wrong time in the wrong job. It's not a big part of the book, but I've always been really, really interested in how the U.S. got so deeply involved in the Vietnam War, really taking over for the French, after they lost.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was something that had we known at the time, instead of just being, 18, 19 years old, if we'd had a little background on what was going on, they never gave us the history of Vietnam. And so many of the books that you have recommended, even today, talk about how things might have been different. I mean, all the way back to the end of World War I, when you said Ho Chi Minh approached Wilson to see if we would be willing to help them out. I think this is really important, especially to the Vietnam generation, but probably to our children and their, grandchildren, who kind of figure out how come this, that grandpa or grandma is still thinking about this stuff.
You're absolutely right, Dale. And it's, how did the United States get involved in a war, to help France get back its colony, right?
Right.
What do we don't stand for that as a country. I mean, we know some of the reasons, and there was this thing called communism that looked like it was taking over the world, and everybody, you know, Ho Chi Minh was a communist, but there was so, like you said, there's so much more involved. We just didn't know. Not only did we who took part in the war not know, but our leaders didn't know the history of what was going on there. So this book, Sharpen Your Bayonets, which is basically, it's a biography. So maybe there's a small part of it because it was only a couple of years out of his life. But Iron Mike O'Daniel did have a role in the earliest beginnings of the U.S. getting involved in the Vietnam War.
Well, I think this has been very enlightening to us, Mark. I appreciate it very much. Could you give the website where you said that the veteran is available? Because I think the people that are not obviously Vietnam veterans but would like to read some of the stories and especially your reviews. Where would they go
great.
For that?
Yeah. So it's Vietnam Veterans Service, says VVAveteran, .org.
Okay.
Or Google the VVA veteran. It'll pop up as the very first one. You can also find it on VVA's homepage, which is just VVA.org.
Right.
But you can go directly there to, VVAveteran.org.
Okay. Well, I think these are great. I'm really happy that at least I've read a couple of them already, but there's a whole list of me going into next year. And, Mark Lipson. Vietnam veteran, book reviewer extraordinaire, and writer of his own right. And I want to thank you so very much for being on our program today.
Dale, it's my pleasure, and thank you for the good work that you do.
Thank you.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant John Fox called in artillery fire on his own position. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
On Christmas night in 1944, enemy soldiers in civilian clothes gradually infiltrated the town Fox and his men were in, and by early morning, the town was largely in hostile hands. An organized attack by uniformed German units began at 4 a.m. Being greatly outnumbered, most of the American forces were forced to withdraw from the town, but Fox and other members of his observer party voluntarily remained on the second floor of a house to direct defensive artillery fire. Fox reported the Germans were in the streets and attacking in strength. He then called for defensive artillery fire to slow the enemy advance. As the Germans continued to press the attack towards the area that Fox occupied, he adjusted the artillery fire closer to his position. Finally, he was warned that the next adjustment would bring the deadly artillery right on top of his position. After acknowledging the danger, Lieutenant Fox insisted that the last adjustment be fired, as this was the only way to defeat the attacking soldiers. Later, when a counterattack retook the position from the Germans, Lieutenant Fox's body was found with the bodies of approximately 100 German soldiers.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Welcome back to Veterans Radio. We've had some major technical difficulties with the second half of today's program, so I kind of went back into the archives and pulled a program out from December of 2012 that has to do with the USO. And I think you'll really find it really fun to listen to, because we've got Bob Hope, and then we have John Hansen, who was the director of the USO at the time. So here we go. We're going right back in time, as they say, to December 22nd, 2012, and here is Bob Hope.
Bob Hope was not only a great comedian, he also was a great hero. What he did for this country in times of crisis will always be remembered.
I just want you boys to see what you're fighting for, that's all.
I was on radio at NBC, and the producer said, they want you at March Field next year. I said, what's March Field? He said, that's an Air Force base in Riverside. I said, well, what do we do there? You know, there's no war or anything. He said, well, they want you down there. It's a great audience.
There you are, Tony. You're down on your knees with 12 suitcases on your back. What are you going to do now?
Well, no sense wasting a position like this. Get out the dice.
And the audience was so great. I said, wait a minute. How long is this been going on? And Christmas time, war started, then it became dramatic. We went 5 straight years all around the world just doing troop shows. One of the greatest things that ever happened to me.
Well, here I am in London, but here we are on the USS Boxer.
Here I am in Alaska.
Colorado Springs.
Guam.
Tokyo.
Here we are in Incirlik, Turkey. Incirlik, that's a Turkish word meaning don't knock it. It beats Vietnam. Uban. Takli. Karat. Achukuchi. Udapad. Van Rang Dang Dang. Chung Ching Chung Kang Air Base. I'm very thrilled to be here on... Where are we?
I was a little kid during the Second World War, and had these really vivid memories of sitting by the radio and listening to Hope.
Some night.
Some night.
Some park.
Some park.
Some moon.
Some moon.
Some bench.
Some bench.
Some grass.
Some grass.
Some do.
I do.
Well, it's nothing like finding out right away, you know what I mean?
The soldiers and sailors that he was entertaining were a real part of the show. You heard these people who were starved for entertainment, starved for some feeling of normal life again. And you heard this tremendous outpouring of energy from them.
Bob Hope, when he came to entertain the troops, it made us, and it probably made other troops feel the same way, made them forget for a little bit the killing and the dying that was taking place. Even though it was for just a short time.
What's the difference between you and an idiot?
Well, for one thing, you don't have a mustache.
Such a thrill for me, all these men whistling and screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been in the jungle too long.
Hey, a little girl, comb your hair, fix your makeup. Soon he will open the door.
He was not interested in anything but pleasing those people.
When you went out on the stage, the acceptance was beyond a great audience, you know, that was going to give you a standing ovation before you even opened your mouth.
Say, Bob, am I standing in the right place?
Don't worry, honey. If you're not, they'll move the bass.
I don't know what I'm doing here, Bob. I can't sing and I can't song.
Oh, just stand there. They'll do the singing and dancing. All right.
He kept the morale up. That was what his job was, to keep that morale up for everybody.
I'll give you 8 bars to make your fame and fortune. Otherwise, it's back to the swamp. Go.
I met Mr. Hope, and he wanted me to try a few bars of White Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
He kind of stunned me with his reaction because he said,
you know, Crosby's got kids everywhere. You guys did to get here, but let that be a lesson to you.
He brought a little bit of home 10,000 miles away, and especially at Christmas time.
Is Specialist 4th Brian H. O'Connell here? Where is he? Would you come up, please?
I went over to Vietnam approximately in June or July of 65. My wife was about 6 months pregnant.
Just before we got on the plane, his wife brought this over to us, and here's a picture of twins, his twins that he's never seen.
I had no idea what they looked like. I just knew that they were twin boys.
And I just want you to take a peek at these little kids. It's the first time he's ever seen them. Those.
My dad didn't like to talk about Vietnam much from his personal experiences. But one thing Dad did talk about from the war was the receiving the picture on stage with Bob Hope.
Congratulations.
When Bob gave me the brag book, I was proud, really proud of him, you know, and I thought it was great. I appreciated it very much. You know, it's a great feeling.
Front row, I mean the whole front section was always the guys that had like a plasma drip going in.
and they would be in bed. You knew that this was serious business, and to hear them laugh.
You remember me, Rosemary's Baby?
Oh, my face will old, nurse.
Yeah. You know, this isn't such a bad part. What the hell is all that firing over there? General, will you call off this stuff, this war, while we're on, please?
He would walk into a hospital, and only he could do this. I mean, and he would lead the gang. It was five women and myself and Peter Leeds and Les Brown, and we all, big troop. And he'd walk in there. His opening remark was, "Don't get up, fellas."
You were seeing kids that had their arms and legs removed. You were seeing guys that had the whole front of their bodies sewn up with great big staples this thick.
I broke down and cried. And he took me aside and gave me a lecture. This isn't why we're here. They want lightness. They want a joke. They want you to pretend that nothing is wrong.
Mini skirts are bigger than ever. Even some of the fellas are wearing them. Don't laugh. If you'd have thought of it, you wouldn't be here.
I think one of the most emotional shows I ever played was when I played for the 1st Marine Division in Pavuvu down in the South Pacific, because we were playing an island called Bonica, and this fellow flew over and said, "Could you possibly do an extra show for the 1st Marine Division? They've never had a show, and they would really love to see you, and they're going to invade Peleliu." And so we flew over the next morning, and you knew when you walked out there that you're playing for 15,000 kids, that a lot of those guys you never see again. And as it worked out, 60% of those kids were knocked off in this invasion of Peleliu.
And we're back. And that was a segment about Bob Hope and the USO shows. Actually, we've got a call on the line. I've got Rob Winter calling from Saline, Michigan. And Rob, you were called in because you went to a USO show.
Yeah, I was in Vietnam in 70 and 71. I was in the Army, and I got the luck of the draw. We had in our company, I don't remember what the allocation, but it was probably only three or four people, but we put our names in the hat, and my name came up, and so I was lucky enough to get to go to one of the famous Bob Hope Christmas shows. So of course, this happened in December of 1970, and I was in the Maricel Division, so I was in the 3rd Battalion in the 1st Infantry, and what started out, we got the chopper took us back to our fire base, which was Fire Support Base 411 or 411, and from there, then they flew us back to Chu Lai, which was the Maricel headquarters. Well, I think that was the point. What started there on the way to Da Nang, where the U.S. Tow Show was being held, which was about a three-hour ride, about 90 miles up Highway 1. We had all been stripped of our weapons, and this was probably the first time for all the guys in this huge convoy that we were without weapons, and it was we all kind of felt naked.
Oh, I'm sure.
And we got trucked up. I guess one of the interesting things too along the way, you know, in Vietnam there were no highway rest stops. So what would happen? They would stop the whole convoy, and everyone would get out and literally go to the side of the road, and there was, as far as you can see, both directions, there were GIs
okay.
doing their thing. So that was you can't forget that picture. I mean, you know, I don't know. We got up there, and this show was, I remember a couple things. Of course, the show had Bob Hope with, just like you were playing in the clip, some of his jokes. But he had Ursula Andress, who, of course, had been very famous for the Bond movie, the Dr. No Bond movie. Lola Falana, who was a dancer. Gloria Loring, who was a good singer at the time. I think it was Jennifer Hostein, who was Miss World, 1970. Johnny Bench was also there, baseball player. And, of course, Les Brown and his band of renown. But I think myself, what I think most of the guys truly liked the best was the Gold Diggers group that he brought along. If people don't know, of course, this was the, you know, right at the end of the 60s, 70s, and they were all in their hip huggers, go-go boots, you know, very tight, showing a lot of leg, and I think everybody thought, you know, because they were, for a lot of the guys, it's the first time they'd truly seen an American girl for, you know, for a long time, and I think they were the hit of the show, if you want to know the truth. At least that was from my perspective, so.
Well, Rob, what did the Bob Hope Show mean to you, in looking back at it?
Well, of course, for me, it was a great break, you know, a couple days. Like I said, it was scary both going and coming because we were vulnerable, but luckily we weren't attacked. They did have they had some helicopter cover on the convoy, but the show itself was morale. I mean, all the guys there, it was, you know, just terrific to see those people coming out to, you know, support the troops and, you know, giving of their time, so, you know, meant a lot, so.
Well, Rob, I want to thank you very much for calling in, and have a very Merry Christmas this year, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Same to you and everyone at Veterans Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is what we're here for today, folks. We want you to call in. If you attended a USO show or have something you'd like to talk about with the USO, give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. We're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to have John Hansen from the USO on to talk about the history of the USO and what they did in the past and what they're doing today. You're listening to Veterans Radio. And that, of course, was the Andrews Sisters, for those of us that are old enough to remember. And I was trying to come up with some tunes for the current USO tours, and unfortunately I got sidetracked, as I normally do when I'm trying to pick music of songs that I heard when I was in the service or when I was growing up, and my dad would talk about the USO shows. And unfortunately I didn't get to go to the US show that was in Long Bend in 1969. I was working that day, and we were flew over until we were told by air traffic control to get out of the area. And it was an amazing sight, with probably 20,000 GIs down in this bowl, and down in the middle of it was this little tiny stage, and you could see just these little people running around, and I was able to find some of that on YouTube. And for those of you that are really interested in looking at some of these older programs, YouTube is a great source for the information. They got a lot of clips of Bob Hope. They have a lot of clips of today's USO shows, so I would encourage you to do that, but not yet. And right now, coming on to the Veterans Radio program is John Hansen. And John is a senior executive with the USO organization. And John, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And thank you so much for your organization and what they do for the troops that are active duty, and, of course, what they do for us that look back at this and just can't thank you, the USO, enough for what you did over in Vietnam, in my case, and all over the world. So tell me a little bit about how the USO came about.
The USO was created in early 1941. In February 1941, President Roosevelt combined the operations of six nonprofit organizations that helped troops, did morale work in World War One, and he said his thought was it would be better if they coordinated their activities. If you look at the USO logo, you'll see six stars, and that is sort of our salute to those six founding organizations that were pulled together. And the whole idea was that the military was expanding, bases were opening all over the country, and there needed to be a coordinated effort to provide morale services and recreational activities for troops at these bases to keep them occupied when they weren't in training.
Well, you know, I'm stuttering here because I'm just fascinated about the whole USO thing and how they got started. We heard in the clip that I played, you know, Bob Hope got started actually before World War II began when he was asked to go to a camp in California.
Yeah, he went to what is now March Air Force Base, March Field, and the story was he really sort of fought it. He said, "Why can't we just bring some troops to the studio?" Mm-hmm. And his producer said, "No, you really need to go out there." And he discovered that there was a great audience that he hadn't even anticipated, and it started his activities. He was on the road nonstop during the war, and as we all know, even afterwards, he did USO tours up through the first Gulf War.
Well, now Bob Hope, of course, wasn't the only one that was, you know, going around the world putting on these programs. You also had programs going on in the States with some of these things called the Stage Door Canteens. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, the Stage Door Canteens were actually started, I think, by John Garfield and Betty Davis as an effort for Hollywood to get involved in the war effort. And troops stationed around the country would go to these before USO clubs were at these locations. They would go to these locations and be served a meal. There'd be some dancing, some entertainment, and they'd happen to be just as likely be waited on by a celebrity. My father is a World War II veteran and was in San Francisco, and it's interesting. The one memory that stood out for him during the war was being served a sandwich by Sophie Tucker at the USO in San Francisco. It means a lot for these for troops still, for celebrities, somebody, as they say, who doesn't have to be here to show up and do something on their own, do something nice.
Well, I don't think that many people are really aware of how many entertainers have been going on USO tours since, you know, over the last 70 years, but even up till today. Can you think of some of the entertainers that have been in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Well, with Robin Williams and Lewis Black, Kid Rock is probably one reason you didn't want to pick any music. Kelly Pickler, the country singer, just finished her sixth USO tour this week. She got back on Tuesday from Afghanistan. Trace Adkins has gone for us a number of times. Toby Keith goes every spring for us, and he insists that while he doesn't mind doing large shows at large bases, that he won't go unless he can go to some forward operating bases. So we have to engineer a tour to make sure that he gets to some really small locations, and he takes him and his guitarist out to entertain troops. Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders are on tour now. They've been going on tour since Vietnam, especially this time of year. They have been going to Japan and Korea. This year they're going to the Persian Gulf area. And so we sort of run the gamut, and we're delighted that celebrities still step up. Gary Sinise has gone around the world for us I don't know how many times, taking either going by himself just to talk to troops or taking the Lieutenant Dan band with him. Mm-hmm. So it's a big roster.
Well, I just think it's amazing, and I want people to really understand that these people are volunteering to go over there. And in fact, one of the clips that I was listening to with Bob Hope, you know, he said, yeah, he went back and they asked him to go again, and I said okay, and he, you know, he went off and did these shows. I'm always amazed at the programs that they put on and the reception that they got, and that, you know, that he gave up his Christmas for, you know, what, 40 years,
yeah,
to put on these programs. And many of these people today are following in those footsteps. Well, if we look at the USO during World War II and, you know, what they did, of course, traveling around the world for those 40 years, what happened to the USO after World War II?
Well, in 1947, as the military was being pared back, Harry Truman gave the USO an honorable discharge and thanked the USO for its services. And over the next couple of years, the USO wound down its service, its activities around the world until 1950. And when the Korean War started, We were, the USO was once again asked to do what it had done in World War II, and we've been going strong ever since.
In Korea, of course, we had the flyer that I sent around. I found a picture of Marilyn Monroe and found out that she had gone to Korea a couple of times. And, of course, the entertainers and Bob Hope, of course, went to Korea. And I had an email from one of our listeners that said that he had seen Bob Hope in Korea, and it just meant so much to him to see the program and, you know, being all these, you know, American guys are overseas, and Bob Hope brings over all these, you know, these young American women, and they say, oh, you know, this is what you're fighting for. And it's kind of interesting. Go ahead, John.
Dale, Marilyn Monroe went to Korea. She and Joe DiMaggio were in Japan, and she decided that she wanted to go to Korea and went over there, and she came back. The story is that she said, Joe, you can't imagine what it's like to have thousands of people yelling your name. And he said, oh, yes, I can.
Yeah, I would say so. it's probably a little bit of a different experience for most of the movie people anyway, to have people yelling and screaming your name at you. And just it was amazing when I was listening to these clips. And again, I encourage people, if you want to find out more about some of these shows that the USO put on, you can find them, of course. But I had to, when I was editing them out, I would edit out sometimes 2 and 3 minutes of the troops just cheering, just because.
And that hasn't changed. The those shows, and your audience needs to understand, the one thing that they do know about the USO is probably our entertainment tours, and it's about 10% of what we do. It's a huge 10%, and it's extraordinarily important. People today in Afghanistan, this time of year, we take a tour over there. They'll wait for 3 or 4 hours in the snow and sit through a 2 or 3 hour show. It means that much to them, and the response is exactly the same. It's noisy, it's boisterous, and it's one reason that once we get a performer to go on a tour, we don't have trouble recruiting that performer
again.
So I
just wanted to wish all of you a very, very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, very, very Happy New Year. And until we see you again, this is Dale Thronberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio. You are dismissed.